There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. This is our daily podcast bringing together the best bits of today's show from Monday the 18th of November. We're talking about dining out discounts. Are they the saviour of the restaurant business or eating the owner's lunch?
All kicked off by Naeem Medad, a man who's kicked off many a conversation from Gates Hospitality.
Naeem is never backwards and coming forwards.
No, he's not. And he was in our studio recently saying that he was going to be logging out. He's going to be leaving the discount apps here in the UAE and launching his own. Basically his own sort of loyalty scheme for his users, for his restaurant customers. There are a number of reasons for doing that. This is Naeem.
We're seeing a huge logout movement, and we're first to partake in that. By the end of this year, we're logging out of all of these service channels, and we're developing our own app, and Gates Hospitality will have our own app where loyalty will be with me, the offering will be with me, and last but not least, people will be able to move within our non-venues and know that they're getting the discounts within the group.
Yeah, Naeem explained to us how the system would work and why he thinks it'll be better for his company.
Upon joining, you get a reward, and then basically based on your spend, there is a dollar tag reflected to it, and you get rewarded. The more you spend, the more you get rewarded.
Reward as in savings, reward as in points, what?
Combination, and the ultimate user decides how they'd like to be rewarded, so we're not coming down with the very rigid app. It's fairly flexible, and considering the loyalty fact, considering that we will talk directly to our clients rather than having an aggregator or somebody in the middle who hogs all the information and only shares what they need to when they need to.
That is Naeem Medad of Gates Hospitality and Bogoffs. Buy one, get one free. I get pretty excited about those when I see those on the app. Stuart Douglas is the managing director, founder of Chef to Chef, and we asked him exactly what his thoughts are on buy one, get one free.
Dubai food scene is a massively growing business here. There's just so much competition, so many restaurants, so many suppliers, so many tourists coming in. So I understand a lot of these apps and things, they're trying to drive volumes into businesses, which is great. Everybody needs to be busy. Us as suppliers, we want to be supplying more. The problem is when everything gets discounted, the consumers don't really understand that if they think they're getting a deal of 50% discount, but that means the restaurant is actually getting 50% less revenue, which means the chef then has 50% less budget to spend on food. His profitability goes down half, and so he's then looking for lower quality, more budget items to put on his offering.
All right, and I tell you what, we've had a lot of restaurateurs speaking to us. Dirk Vanderhaar is the director of SWR Hospitality. They've got Maison Matisse and a lot of Belgian-y type cafes that will serve you frites. He's one that is coming off the apps, and we asked him why.
We're on all the apps for the discounts. However, we have developed also our own app about a year ago, where we decided that we want to take more own control over our discounts. So we have developed SWR Hospitality app. And on this, we're giving a 10% cash back to our guests because we believe that discounts are important. However, we want to keep our own control. So we have not gone off the app, the discount apps yet. However, we are looking into moving that direction.
Right, so that's one who says that they're looking at leaving. Tapan Vaja is the CEO of Papa John's Pizza here in the UAE. He's not going anywhere.
From the entertainer is that, yes, we are eroding our margins by giving the two-for-one offer to the entertainer customers. But what happens in the process is the entertainer exposes us to a vast set of new customers who, and the conversion rate may not be very high, but even if we convert 10% of those new customers to our full-paying customers, it's worth it.
Yeah, and Tapan told us he was converting over 10%. We are going to be hearing from the entertainer in just a few minutes, but my goodness, we have been hearing from you.
And yes, because Alison has called in to say she agrees with me. The Bogoffs are wonderful, the Bogoff apps. Buy one, get one free. And this is Alison.
We always use buy one, get one free. I think everywhere in Dubai is getting pretty expensive now. Disposable income is shrinking. And I'm actually not aware of anyone who doesn't avail of the entertainer or other such offers. We also tell our house guests to download such apps. Because what we find is they normally make the cost back during that day. I think it's naive to think that people don't want to use such apps and save money.
Do you know what? We've got a lot of messages.
I'm part of the problem. I'm part of the problem. I've got a freezer full of one half of the Bogoffs.
Yeah.
Right.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
The conversation is about dining out and how much you're paying for it. If you are getting one of your courses free or a discount. This was all kicked off a couple of days ago. Naeem Medad of Gates Hospitality was in our studio, and in the discussion, he let it slip that they are putting together their own discount system, effectively. They are coming off the discount apps, the buy one, get one free apps, and the websites, and he is doing it himself. This is Naeem.
We're seeing a huge logout movement, and we're first to partake in that. By the end of this year, we're logging out of all of these service channels, and we're developing our own app, and Gates Hospitality will have our own app where loyalty will be with me, the offering will be with me, and last but not least, people will be able to move within our non-venues and know that they're getting the discounts within the group.
And we asked Naeem how it was going to work, and he told us what he expected his system to look like.
Upon joining, you get a reward, and then basically based on your spend, there is a dollar tag reflected to it, and you get rewarded. The more you spend, the more you get rewarded.
Reward as in savings, reward as in points, what?
Combination, and the ultimate user decides how they'd like to be rewarded. So we're not coming down with the very rigid app. It's fairly flexible, and considering the loyalty fact, considering that we will talk directly to our clients rather than having an aggregator or somebody in the middle who hogs all the information and only shares what they need to when they need to.
Which is fighting talk. Now, we said to Naeem, hang on, a lot of people make their decisions about where to eat based on where they have vouchers and discounts. So aren't you worried about missing out on customers if you don't have that kind of visibility?
It's a massive debate we've had internally, and I've been toying around with the app idea for the last 12 months, but we've decided to move forward, and I think the success of this app will be based on how strongly do we deliver, how strongly do we promote, how strongly do we engage with the community, not forgetting that all of my venues are within community centres, and all of my venues are within strong addresses where we have been able to deliver, and we have been able to be a very strong part of the community.
Right, that's Naeem Medad from Gates Hospitality, a man never short of an opinion or two. So we reached out to the biggie. We reached out to the giant when it comes to buy one, get one free or discounting. That is, of course, the Entertainer. Chris Shaw is the general manager for the Middle East at the Entertainer. Chris, thank you very much for coming in.
Absolute pleasure.
So what do you make of Naeem's comments?
Very interesting. It's a massive discussion. I don't think it's a massive movement unless you're in India, where the logout campaign started. But it's certainly a discussion. I think the industry is sort of firing a warning shot over the bows of the aggregator. But let's look at the data. I have 13% more merchants signed up for my 2020 product on the 17th of November this year than I did on the 17th of November last year. So there's certainly not a logout movement here.
Naeem's... Thank you for the numbers. Always love a number. Naeem's voiced some concerns there because they're obviously not doing this lightly. I mean, they know that they get visibility. And he said, you know, it's been an internal debate. One of the things that he raised was data. And people obviously are getting a lot more data minded, saying that they want the data about the customers rather than having a third party have it. Are you doing anything to address that with your partners?
Yeah, absolutely. We've realised a year or two back that that's hugely important. We have created what we call a merchant portal. Every partner who operates with us has access to the back end of the system. So they're able to see demographic data, behavioural data and comparative data. So there's no data shortage whatsoever.
But you don't give them the ability to contact that client?
No, we're GDPR compliant, so it's impossible to hand over the personal data of the customer. But all the demographic, all the behavioural and all the comparative data is available.
GDPR being the European regulations that came in at the end of May last year.
Correct.
Protecting the rights and privacy of the individual.
Correct.
What kind of customers are you having with your partners, though, at the moment? We know that restaurants are under strain in general. We've just had a big chat to the founder of Chef to Chef, about what he's seeing with the people he's working with. Are you having discussions with your customers about how you guys can make it easier on them, or how you can work with them at a time when they're more worried about the bottom line?
Yeah, we are. The you know, if we go back quickly to the logout movement, you know, that was all around aggressive discounting and predatory pricing. We don't play in that field. You know, we are a partner. We've had, you know, partners working with us since inception. And the conversations that we're having at the moment about volumes, how can we drive more volume? And I think that plays to the discussion in the earlier segment around the supply and demand issue. So we're doing our best to do more for the merchant partners that we have on board.
Where are you seeing the most demand in your apps? I mean, you guys go the full gamut from sort of burgers to people serving you whilst wearing gloves. Is there one section of that that's doing better than the other?
Yeah, it's definitely the fast casual. Fast casual segment is the most popular. These are your multi outlet restaurants.
What sort of price range is that?
Anywhere from sort of 20 through to 60 dirhams for a main course item.
What do you think needs to be done in the restaurant industry as a whole at the moment to ease some of the pain for restaurateurs, if indeed that's possible at this stage? I mean, we've discussed this morning oversupply. We have discussed pricing. We are obviously discussing the discounting apps as well. What do you actually think the industry needs?
That's a big question. The supply and demand issue is definitely one of them. Quality, you know, I certainly subscribe to that. But I think the real key is back to the data. You know, people need to start using data in a far more effective way than they are at the moment.
You mentioned earlier that you're getting a lot of new people signing up for the app and suggesting that that was a sort of a pat on the back for yourselves. How does that balance against people that are dropping out or cancelling?
We don't see many people dropping out. I think that's, you know, as far as the logout piece is concerned, restaurants do close. You know, we see them pop up and disappear.
Are you not seeing many drop off the app if they're still running?
No, not many. No. I mean, occasionally it'll happen. You know, people will drop off. People will come back on. You know, Q1 is usually very busy for us in that regard.
Chris Shaw is the general manager for the Middle East at The Entertainer, coming in to stick up for the buy one, get one freeze in the debate that we are having. Chris, thanks ever so much for your time.
Thanks very much.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Size Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's pick of the papers.
Super pleased to have Natasha Thomas from the ARN News team in the studio. She's the one who keeps them all in line. Natasha, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
What are you guys leading with this morning?
Well, we're looking at the new lunar rover. The UAE is taking further strides in the field of space exploration. It's been confirmed that the country will be the testing ground for the world's smallest robotic moon rover called Spider.
Down Sheikhzayed Road? Rush hour?
No, not down Sheikhzayed Road. So the exact location has not been finalized yet, but it looks like Jebel Hafith in Al Ain is a strong contender. The rover is currently in its final development stage in the UK, and you can check out its 3D model at the Dubai Air Show. I bet Richard can take some pictures today when he heads down there.
You said tiny. How tiny is it?
I don't have the exact specifications of the size, but it is the world's smallest robotic moon.
Tiny by
rover.
Moon rover standards.
By usual standards, yes, it's tiny. So the company behind the project, Spacebit, is actually down at Dubai Air Show, and they say it's the first time any lunar exploration vehicle with legs will be sent into space to explore the surface of the moon. And the reason the UAE is the ideal location is because we have caves, we have underground ravines, and those are close in structure to the lunar lava tubes. This is what they're called in the moon. And the Spacebit team say this will help them get a better assessment of how it will operate.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is, indeed. We're also looking at the new UAE brand logo. You know, we have such amazing logos which come up in the UAE. I personally love the Dubai logo.
This is the one on the car license plates. It's woven into the English and the Arabic, yeah.
Yes. So now a team of 49 Emirati artists have been tasked with selecting the design for the UAE's brand logo before the end of this year. So there are 7 from each emirate. They've been selected. They'll gather today in the largest of its kind innovative workshop to brainstorm and design the UAE nation brand logo. And it's expected to reflect the country's unique identity. Now, they're being called the Inspiring 49. And this workshop has come in response to an invitation from the UAE's rulers who had earlier launched this particular project.
We have been looking at the insolvency law here on the Business Breakfast this morning. Not as much as we will be tomorrow. We're going to come in with some real analysis tomorrow morning as well. I think this is a story, to be honest, that's going to run all week because big changes. Federal law being approved by the UAE Cabinet in order to basically put in better conditions for people who are in financial difficulties or even just moving towards it, because there's quite a preemptive strike in this new legislation as well, protecting people who are unable to pay their debts from going bankrupt. So they're going to help them reschedule debts. There will apparently be the opportunity for new concessional loans. You're going to be able to get experts appointed to help you with it all. And most vitally, the new law will also protect people from legal prosecution, so effectively decriminalising personal debt.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I like the fact that these experts will be appointed by a court. These experts will coordinate with the debtor and the creditors to come up with a plan which cannot last more than 3 years. So you have 3 years in addition to, you know, whatever you're facing to settle your financial liabilities.
I'm presuming that means you won't be able to leave the country during that time.
We presumably have to get all the details. Yeah. Yes, there is an assumption there, but mainly the fact that they seem to be decriminalising insolvency, and that's the main point we're getting out of it.
It's often said, isn't it, that entrepreneurs sort of will fail 3 to 6 times before they actually hit on the big success story.
Yeah.
We've been speaking to Sam Enstone this morning, CEO and founder of AES International Financial Advisors. We've been asking him what he makes of it all.
Really what it means is they're going to introduce insolvency laws which are in line with best practice. So there's going to be a mechanism. Some people are going to love it, others, particularly bankers, potentially not, aren't going to enjoy it quite so much. But really it's a mechanism where the court's going to appoint an expert to coordinate between the debtor and creditor to come up with a plan which is going to last for no more than 3 years, in which they have the opportunity to find a way to settle their liabilities. So really it's just the introduction of best practice insolvency laws.
How much is it going to protect debtors?
I think initially it will be interesting to see how this is actually introduced. I think it will probably depend on the seriousness, depend on the exact circumstances of each individual. But what I think will happen overall, it will certainly enhance the attractiveness of the UAE for things such as entrepreneurship, create more favourable conditions for growth, and enhance competitiveness and strengthen the overall economy. But I think it will still be fairly specific to the circumstances and how people actually got themselves into that debt and what mechanism they're looking to actually get out of it.
It will certainly encourage people to start up companies, or at least remove the fear of starting up companies that don't work out, because, you know, the more companies you have, the more chance of success. And this is a generally good move. That was Sam Enstone of AES International.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Etihad relaunching its loyalty program. We're very pleased to be joined in the studio by Kim Hardacre, who is the head of Etihad Guest. Kim, it's lovely to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Why have you relaunched the loyalty program?
We started this adventure or the journey about 12 months ago when we identified that we really needed to take a shift and put the customers at the heart of everything that we do. We'd received a lot of feedback, whether it's phone calls, whether it's emails. Obviously, with 7 million members, there is no shortage of feedback to pour through. And we identified there's a few things that we really needed to do to demonstrate that loyalty back to those members. And here we are as of Thursday with that announcement with 8 new enhancements. Actually, maybe I've just announced one that we haven't said yet, but many new enhancements to let our members know that this is the fresh take with their feedback at heart and inspiring the changes that we have made to the program.
Is this reflecting the fact that we've seen a lot of changes in Etihad in general?
I think it's aviation in general and loyalty. Loyalty is becoming a heavily commoditized space. So in order to be truly effective, we need to be finding a point of difference so that we can offer something truly important to these members because they can get it multiple places. And obviously, I know you're talking about restaurant loyalty today. Across various different sectors, loyalty is ever present. So it is about being really listening to what these members want so that we can design something and curate something just for them.
Right. So what do you reckon you can do better and different?
It's really about listening to the feedback. I think, businesses everywhere make a lot of decisions not necessarily being customer-centric. That is definitely, I think, a trend in the market wherever you look, and it's what their feedback is. And I'm in personal contact with many of our members. We've done countless interviews, countless surveys, and asked for this feedback. So it really is inspired by them, and that will continue. This is not a one-stop shop, and I think that's what we feel really confident about, why ever we have that direct conversation with those members, and for some of them even to be able to contact me, which they did actually on Thursday when we announced, and just said, like, thank you, you have heard what we have said. And that's really powerful. So I think it's knowing that we will always be using that as part of our strategy. I think we will always have a strong program designed around the people that matter.
Yeah, I mean, you just use the phrase there, loyalty is ever-present, which of course it's not in general, because you can lose loyalty fairly quickly. But these points will be ever-present now, which is a good thing. We were lamenting the fact that they just disappeared down a sort of black hole in the middle, really, when they expired, that they don't get used for charity, for anything else, to, you know, for the good of the planet, if you like. They just disappear. So is there absolutely no end date on this? I mean, are you going to have to now keep loyalty programs open for the next 25 years simply because those points don't expire?
So the expiry of points, we're still defining those rules. So as you will have noticed, it was coming soon. More work to do in that space. But obviously, if you look across various different loyalty programs, they have different application of how you keep those points alive. For Miles in our instance, I think what we were seeing, though, is for a lot of our members and I mean, people in general, member or not member, some fly frequently and some don't. So to be able to keep those miles longer if you did an eligible transaction means that you can be a member of our program and not sort of feel that fear that your miles are going to expire if I don't use them within necessarily a shorter period of time, especially as we see it's, you know, and the average travel period is once every 18 months. Now, that's quite a long time, but it's also, if you would have seen in the release, it's very much pitching to be a lifestyle program as well as a travel program, so we can be more relevant every day.
You mentioned 7 million members there. Mm-hmm. Where are they based? UAE, UK, Australia?
So our top five markets are obviously our home market, UK, Australia, India, and Saudi Arabia.
So you've got more members here than anywhere else, have you?
We do.
Well, how many of those 7 million are in the UAE?
It's a very big chunk. I would say about 60% of our members.
Let's look at some of these changes in depth. You've mentioned there the non-expiry of miles as long as people make a transaction that counts within 18 months. What kind of transactions will count when it comes to keeping your miles?
It will be eligible accrual, so earning of miles, or an eligible redemption.
What else are you going to be able to do with your miles other than just upgrade your flight or book a new flight?
So we actually have a very strong lifestyle proposition. So outside of the travel ones that you just mentioned, it's experiences, local experiences here, whether it's Yas Island, Ferrari World. We have a lot of products on our redemption store. So lots of good brands from Amazon through to Bose through to Mont Blanc. We have also many donations, as Malcolm just mentioned, where you can gift to a variety of creditable charities, which we actually see is quite a prominent option, especially for people who have had miles expiring, but also people who would like to make a difference.
How many people actually want the lifestyle side of things rather than flights or upgrades? I mean, there's a, I don't know how true it is or not, but the general thought amongst people, sort of, you know, the general rumour, if you like, is that you get less bang for your miles if you buy a perfume than if you upgrade on a flight.
Absolutely, the travel benefits are the most desirable benefits, and I don't think that's ever going to change. There's an emotional aspect of travel that people love to get those bits and pieces complimentary. The lifestyle piece is definitely strong and growing and something that we will continue to invest into because, as I was saying, when travel may not be as frequent for every day, it is important that I can feel recognised or be rewarded with my hard-earned miles on a day-to-day basis versus waiting a year, for example.
What percentage of all points earned expire?
It varies. It varies dramatically by market and by different type of members.
Say the UAE. Is it 10%, 50%? I'm just talking about magnitude.
Honestly, there's not one percentage because obviously our highest value guests that fly up to 5 times per week versus everyday sort of entry-level member that someone's just joined, it's completely different. There isn't a flat percentage that we work with.
Okay, one very quick question before we let you go. Someone's messaged in, do the Etihad miles earned through credit card purchases not expire as well? Will they also be perennial?
So the Etihad guest miles, so as
credit
I said,
card miles, yeah.
So Etihad guest miles earned via credit card spend, yes, that is considered an eligible transaction. As I said, we're still working through all those rules, but that is obviously it's a huge or very productive aspect of our lifestyle proposition is our co-brand credit cards.
Kim Hardacre is the head of Etihad guest at Etihad Airways. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening. We're back tomorrow at 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.